and conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Progress Pride flag will fly over the Wisconsin State Capitol building for the month of June. In Wisconsin and across the United States, June is LGBTQ+ Pride Month. Governor Tony Evers said in a press conference on Friday that flying the Progress Pride flag is a symbol of his resolve to support the LGBTQ+ community.
Raising the Pride flag above the Wisconsin State Capitol sends a clear, unequivocal, and decisive message that in Wisconsin, all are welcome.
June is also Invasive Species Awareness Month. Visit the DNR website for info on how to hike, camp, fish, and garden in ways that prevent the spread of invasive species. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
My mom has taken up going to the park to practice yoga.
My dad's going to a club, but not a book club, a salsa club.
Finding new hobbies comes with age.
My mom has started getting lost and not knowing where she's going.
Becoming lost or disoriented doesn't. Confusion with time or place may be a sign of Alzheimer's. An early diagnosis can help improve the quality of life for your loved one. Learn the warning signs of Alzheimer's at 10signs.org. Brought to you by the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Looking for the game? Find us over the air for sports coverage on Civic Media stations.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Historic day yesterday. We have a convicted felon, ex-president. And my email box, full of the right losing their mind and the left jumping for joy, celebrating. We have a convicted felon, ex-president. And look, well-deserving. Understand, well-deserving. But for me, a little sad. A little sad in the fact that this is where we are. This is what has happened in our country. This is not the legacy I want for my grandkids and great-grandkids to read about in their history books. Because imagine in 100 years, the history books are going to be talking about a porn star. A porn star will be in the history books. And I'm sure depending on how this goes in November, if he loses, the narrative will be a porn star saved America. And while some of that may be true, there's also a positive. And it's not a happy thing or a sad thing for me. It just is a reassuring thing. Our system works. Got a trial, jury of his peers, a decision. I'll be honest, I really thought that there would be someone, a fly in the ointment, that you could have ended up with a hung jury. I've been saying for a while, I don't know that he gets the guilty verdict he so richly deserves if you look at the evidence. But, saying, look, if you follow the evidence from what I've seen, given the fact that Michael Cohen was found guilty, Weisselberg and all these other people who were involved in this, you would think, you know, the evidence is there. And look, 12 people came to the decision that, yep, guilty. Guilty on all 34 counts. All 34 counts, 11 counts related to invoices, 11 counts related to checks, 12 counts related to ledger entries. It's all, you know, it's one of those things like my grandfather always said, you know, don't lie, because you just end up compounding it. And then one lie goes on top of another lie on top of another lie until you're guilty of a whole bunch of lying. This is kind of it. Now, understand, the right is losing their mind. They're comparing us to Haiti. What was the one email I got in the subject line said, you know, about the verdict? We expect this in Haiti or Russia, but not America. No, this is exactly how we do things in America. Person went on trial, had a chance to lay out the evidence, had the best attorneys his money could buy. Understand, most people don't have the resources that this guy had to put on a really, really strong defense. Most people, they go in there and they're completely outgunned. And the fact that he had every opportunity to defend himself and still didn't, all he could do was whine and complain. Now, this is going to be it, I think, in the trial side of things, of the, 91 counts that are against him. This is going to be it. You're not getting anything before the 2024 presidential election. But here's the thing. He's now a convicted felon. That is exactly what it is. And, you know, I look at this, and look, he's going to be the Republican nominee. So for all those people out there going, you know, he's going to be the nominee. And in fact, some people are going to be drawn to him because the rhetoric and I'm doing this for you kind of stuff. But for me, I gotta tell you, though, I'm while the system to me is working, and that's a good thing, it's really a sad day that we find ourselves in the midst of this historical first. We are living history. We are living things that future generations will examine us for. And I would argue not in a good way. This isn't the legacy I wanted future generations to think of us. I would hope, you know, building big things and doing amazing stuff and you know, conquering, you know, new worlds. But the gloating on one side, the finger pointing on the other, it's tragic. And it's tragic when someone that you put into an elected office, the highest office in the land, is corrupt and leaving destruction in their wake. Look, the sheer number of felonies for which this guy's been found guilty is a testament to the extent of what he's done, the callous disregard for the rule of law he's exhibited. Really, I'm not surprised we're here. It shouldn't surprise anyone. Trump has always been morally bankrupt and manipulating and all of these things. It's always been about the brand. His abuse of power, the exploitation of the vulnerable. And look, not just as president, but his entire life. Now we got to figure out, you know, where we go from here. We got to figure out how we now pick up the pieces and move forward. And understand, the good thing that came out of this is no one's above the law. No one. We have a real opportunity to use this as a positive to build upon. And I know, but Rick, this was just about hush money to a porn star. No, it was about election interference. The hush money to the porn star was just the vehicle on which they tried. Because understand, any other person who runs for president, never mind. We've been down this road. But I want to hear your thoughts. Are you surprised at the verdict? And do you think it's the right one? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So now all the questions are, is Trump going to go to jail? Can he be president? How's this going to play out from this point forward? Lots of interesting questions. And I got to tell you, like I said earlier, the reality, some people really too happy, some people really too sad. And we'll see. I'm a little sad over the fact that this is where we are as a country, that this is what Donald Trump has brought to our nation. And here's share some thoughts on yesterday's verdict. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to check out her work. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. You know, look, as I said, you know, this verdict, I got to be honest, I was predicting that he would be found guilty. I'm also predicting he's not going to jail. But it's kind of a sad thing that, you know, someone who held the highest office in the land is this kind of a dirtbag.
Did you really think he was going to be found guilty? I'm pretty sure we had a whole conversation last week where you were like, I don't know. And I was like, I'm pretty sure he's going to be found guilty. And you were like, I don't know.
If you looked at the evidence from what I was being presented with, he was guilty. What I didn't know is if you were going to have that one guy, that one red hat that scooted in that hung the jury. I never thought he was going to be found not guilty. I thought it would be a perpetual hung jury, and that's where my concern was. I got to tell you, I'm happy that they came to a conclusion, and we'll see where it goes from here.
I think, you know, a lot of folks have been saying that this is a sad day for America. Ellie Mistal, who is the legal analyst for The Nation, had an interesting response to that, where he said that he couldn't hear that comment over the sound of making sangria.
No, and I understand that too, but you know, I don't care about Donald Trump. Donald Trump, that to me, he is everything that is being said about him, and then some. For me, I think about what future generations are going to think of this time, when my great great grandchildren learn about the history of which their parents and grandparents grew up in. This is what is going. A porn star saved America. That will be the chapter of one of their online book things.
You know, I think in my heart, I want to think of it as 12 everyday Americans showed up and saved America. And I wouldn't even categorize it as they saved us so much as they just performed their civic duty as jurors. We don't even know necessarily if that will save America. We don't know how people will be able, how this would be received.
Yeah. No. Good point.
But I think the way that we should look at it in terms of why we should be so happy about it is that this is justice in action, and justice worked for the most powerful person in America. And that's a big deal, because I'm pretty sure most of us walk around assuming that there are two worlds of justice, one for the rich and famous and one for the rest of us.
No, I still believe that. But in this case, you're right. 12 people showed up and they did their job. They weighed the evidence, and you're absolutely right.
And I think, you know, as we go forward, you know, if maybe by some miracle we get the federal trials to unfold, I just hope that the same can be said for the federal juries, that they would consider, they would hold this with the weight that the New York jury seemed to. And I think we'll hear from the jurors, obviously, the thing that Judge Mershon told them all is you can talk to anybody you want now if you want to, or don't talk to anybody if you don't.
Oh, I'm sure there are 12 books coming out.
That's what I wondered, because, I mean, they talked about how the way there are in the jury instructions, there are rules for how you can use your notes. And at no point in any of the rules that they read did it not say to author my own book about this. So I was just like, man, that's why I'd be taking notes right there, is to make sure that I got my story out about what was going on. But, you know, I remember what happened in the Manafort trial with the MAGA woman who was a red hat wearing, you know, Trumpster, who went in there and said, you know, I 110% support Donald Trump. I voted for him. I'm going to vote for him again. But this guy was guilty. And I think, you know, I don't know how many Republicans were on the jury or how many Trump supporters were on the jury, if any at all. But we know that there are definitely some Fox News viewers. And I don't know if it may just very well be that they understand the gravity of this and were able to read what the law is and what happened and link the two together.
Do you think it mattered that Trump didn't take the stand? Do you think that had any weight one way or the other?
I do, actually, because one of the things that he kept spouting over and over again was how everything is rigged and, you know, everybody's against him. And even in the closing arguments his attorney gave, you know, made this whole comment about how every campaign in the country is a conspiracy now, which is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. And it's just kind of like this, I have this feeling of, well, if everything is rigged and everything's a conspiracy, then why didn't you take the stand? Why are you not standing there defending yourself and speaking out? I mean, he also complained about the fact that there were witnesses that he didn't get to call. It's like, dude, you could call anybody you wanted. You just couldn't have them say on the stand, you know, he's innocent, right? Like, you had to actually have them state facts.
Yeah.
And that was the problem that he had with everything. He could call anybody.
I mean, one of the favorite things of mine that came out of this. Now, understand, I didn't follow every minute of every day. I got the blurb in the morning. Like, oh, because that happened. I kept up with it in a very arm's length kind of way. But one of his responses to the closing arguments, which I got to tell you is hysterical, the fact that he complained that he didn't get to go last. And why is it that the prosecution gets to go last? You know, it's unfair that the prosecution gets to go last. And I'm just going, you know, tell me you don't know anything about our legal system without telling me you don't know anything about our legal system.
Yeah, I mean, that is the same thing. One of the other comments that he made as he came out of court on Thursday was that, you know, he was frustrated that all of these jurors, you know, were Democrats and therefore they couldn't give him a real verdict to begin with. And so it seems like this whole thing was so much based on his ignorance of the system, and his twisting of his own kind of perception of what he thought should happen and what, you know, how he wasn't getting away with whatever he wanted to, essentially.
Yeah, he wasn't the one who had the last say. And that really, I looked, you know, that Truth Social post, you could feel him just, you know, wanting to explode at the fact that he didn't get the last word. And it wasn't, you know, I don't think he cared about anything but the trial. Just the fact that he didn't get the last word in what he views as an argument, I think is quite hysterical.
But that's him. You know, that is so him. Yeah. I can't think of anything other than, you know, I am right, everybody's wrong, I will have the last word, and I will be, you know, the definitive, you know, the decider on everything, right? It's just, that's who he is, and so, who we've had to deal with for 9 years now.
Any chance he goes to jail?
I don't know, maybe.
I mean, there's zero. Possible. I'm going to write this down. There's 0% chance he goes to jail.
I can see him being held in some sort of confinement. Whether that's jail, I don't really know. Whether that's house arrest, I'm not really sure either. Yeah. No, it happens.
No criminal record.
July 11th.
No criminal record. 70 some years old. All the nightmare that it would be. I see no way that he goes to jail. Maybe you're right. Maybe there'd be some kind of he's got to stay on the golf course in Bedminster. You know, New Jersey is his punishment. But I just don't see anything. I don't know. I just don't see anything big.
I mean, when I look at Alan Weisselberg and Michael Cohen, Alan Weisselberg is like 900 years old. Michael Cohen, again, never committed a crime in his life until this incident this
that we know of
down.
That we know of. I'm not going there with you. I am not going with you on the Trump fixer didn't commit any crimes. He didn't get any committed crimes he got caught for.
He was never found guilty of anything.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
And the same true for Weisselberg, right? The 900-year-old CFO. And yet both of them, you know, got time, and Weisselberg got time twice in Rikers. So I feel like this is something where the courts are not taking any of these things into consideration. And it wouldn't be, I mean, I think everybody thinks the guy's not going to jail because he's the president. And that's everyone admitting, you know, the justice system isn't fair. You know, everybody else would be sent to jail for this crime. And so I think our question should be, if he is not sent to jail, why not?
Yeah, from what I understand, the charges that he's been found guilty for add up to about anywhere from 18 months to 4 years. Now, you know, I guess you can look at, you know, if it were you or me, we'd probably get the 4 years. But I do find it interesting. He's going to have to go through the whole pre-sentencing background check. They're going to, you know, have to check into his, and whatever they want to look into, they're going to have to look at his mental health, the circumstances around the case, and they'll have to, you know, compile this pre-sentencing report, which should be entertaining reading. I hope it becomes public. It probably won't be.
I hope it does, but hope it probably won't be. But it would be awesome if it was. I can guarantee you that there will be some newspapers that sue for Freedom of Information Act under it.
Absolutely.
Asking for it. I think the other part too is, you know, there are all of these rules now because Trump is a convicted felon. So he can't purchase a gun. He can't have a real estate license. Which I think is kind of funny. But if you remember,
does he have one now this summer?
Huh?
Does he have one now?
I don't think he does.
I don't think so.
But I know that he has a firearm. I don't know if you remember last summer, he went to some gun show or something and he bought some gun store in like South Carolina, North Carolina, I forget. Anyway, he bought a gun. He did it on camera. You know, I think he probably had to fill out all of the forms of everything that said, you know, I'm not a convicted felon.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that means they take away his gun or, you know, it's just, you can't buy anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if he gets caught with it, who knows? So the question then becomes, what does this mean for the other trials? Do you think this will set a tone for the trials to come, which do you think any of them come before the election?
Probably not.
No.
If I was him, I would be demanding that Cannon make this thing happen quickly because he wants to override what happened in Manhattan, right? Like, he's got to come up with something to counteract that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's any way to do that unless he has another trial. I don't think Fulton County's happening. I mean, unless we get a decision from the Supreme Court, this, you know, by the deadline, they have to do it by the deadline. And I think that puts us at, you know, the last week in October where we would be having the federal trial around the election. And I don't know if Judge Chutkan is brave enough to just be like, no, we're going to trial 3 days before the election. Come on, everybody.
So I guess the question then becomes, you know, what does this mean for the campaign? Do you think this helps or hurts him? Because there was some polling done a while ago that said that, you know, if he were convicted, some Republicans might go a different direction. But, you know, he's out there saying this is a witch hunt, this is a rigged, you know, all of the victim stuff. Do you think it's going to matter?
I think he's going to raise a ton of money off of it, which will help him with any appeal or
he's doing that.
All of his other legal fees. Yeah, he's definitely already on that. He sent out a text. He sent out an email. He's posted memes like crazy.
Even I got one.
Right? Like everybody got one. But I think what will be different is I'm not sure it's going to change any votes. Like people who are hardcore into Trump right now are probably not moving. For people that are the very, very small percentage of undecideds, I think this will make a huge difference. And I don't know that all of them come over to Biden, but if even, you know, 80% comes over to Biden, this thing's over.
We'll see where it takes us. I got to ask you about this other story, a complete change of topics. You know, we were talking about Judge Alito and the flags. I'm sure you've been paying attention to this hot button issue, and I know this doesn't rise to the sexiness of the Trump trial, but as a journalist, because you know when I read this story that said, yeah, all of this stuff about Alito and his flags and all this stuff, evidently the Washington Post knew 3 years ago, and they decided, maybe this isn't important, and it got me to thinking I should talk to a journalist. On, you know, should we be outraged by the fact that we've got, you know, the Washington Post or and other publications going, well, this isn't really news. You know, the things that our elected leaders do, not really important, especially something I think as crazy as this. Curious your thoughts on just on the publication part of it.
I do think that it was absolutely the wrong thing to do. And it's completely dishonest. And I think it really challenges the legitimacy of any newspaper. It wasn't just the Post, it was the Times too. The Times had this a while ago. I don't know if you remember the Bob Woodward book that came out where he did all these interviews where he recorded Donald Trump in 2020, during in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And there was one conversation he had with Donald Trump where, you know, while Donald Trump is telling us all the pandemic's fine, nobody's going to get hurt, nobody's going to die, everything's okay, don't panic, he was telling Bob Woodward, we're all going to die. And Bob Woodward didn't say anything.
Yeah, he held that.
And he held that for his book so he could make money off of it. And I mean, journalism has become a business.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many newspapers that are either shutting down, like small newspapers that are shutting down, or they're going to nonprofits because the funding model just doesn't work if you're, you know, hacking everybody on both sides off. But at the same time, you know, you have this duty to be, if you're going to be the press, then you got to be the press. And I'm just really, I'm shocked at the idea that any journalist who had this information would be okay with it. I'm not shocked that a corporate publication would be like, yeah, we're gonna hide this.
Yeah, but hasn't newspapers always been big business though? I mean, you know, it's been about profit too. It's been about power. It's been about control. It's been about all those things. It's just now it seems like the things are magnified by we finally find out.
I think we had this cultural belief before, you know, the Cronkite and the Murrows of the world who upheld this idea of journalism as something that was sacred and accountability was a big part of it. And that is, you know, with the hairdos that are the cable news outlets, right? This is something that is completely different. It's all about making money, getting clicks. No. And I'm as guilty of that as anybody else. Like there are stories that we don't write because no one will read them. And there are stories that are important, like climate change and immigration, but audiences don't click on them. So it ends up becoming this thing, this battle of how do you balance telling people stories that matter and actually making money off of it.
That's why I prefer the newspaper. I do. I prefer the newspaper because as you're flipping through it, it's there. And you get at least get a second with it. the possibility that you're going to read it instead of, you know, what we see, you know, what we're being force fed. Lastly on this, I got to get your thoughts though. Interesting how Alito threw the wife under the bus.
I know, right? I don't know how that works in a marriage. I mean, if I was a spouse, I'd be taking the rolling pin to his head, but that's just me.
There you go. Rolling pin to the noggin.
Right?
For the win. that's where we will end it.
It's funny because I do have one. It's marble, though.
Yeah, my wife's got one, too. Don't give her any ideas. But thanks so much for being here, Sarah. As always, great stuff.
Thank you so much. Have a great week.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts. Are you surprised by the verdict? Did you think it was going to happen? And do you think he's going to go to jail? I'm still saying zero chance he gets an orange jumpsuit and is a guest at the Gray Bar Hotel. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
Listen to sports coverage from Mike Clemens on Civic Media stations all across Wisconsin.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media is your spot for sports. From updates on your favorite teams, live broadcasts of the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, and Bucks, and local sports coverage in your community, we've got everything you need. Find a station near you at civicmedia.us or download the free app today. We'll have more news and talk coming up here on Civic Media's stream.
The John and Gordy Show.
We got fired a lot of times for different reasons.
Oh, nice.
And we got fired so many times, it was the only press that we were able to get in this town. And one of the stories had us pictured on the cover.
Wow.
And so we did that. We did a little interview. Paper came out on a Sunday. We got fired the next day.
Tune in while you still can. Weekday mornings 6 until 8 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I want to thank everybody who sent emails talking about child labor, talking about convict lease programs, inmate prison labor. You know, lots of stuff coming from across the country of people sharing their stories of family members from generations past who grew up working in the mines or in the mills or doing factory jobs. And number of people saying, hey, you know, I know people who are in prison that, you know, this is the work that they're doing and getting really the short end of things. And it got me to thinking about, you know, when we did the Lackawanna the mine coal tour back, you know, when we were doing our Working Class Heroes tour, in the heart of Pennsylvania's coal country. And you think about, you know, the mid 19th century, you know, the 20th, early 20th, mid to early 20th century, a time when coal reigned supreme in this state and really across the country, where the air was filled with the echoes of pickaxes, you know, hitting stone like a mournful symphony of pain and misery that you knew what it was. And, you know, the souls that were toiling in the depths of the ground. You think about the children that went down there, and I can't help but get the image of that kid down in the mines out of my head. You think about this kid that was born into a life of darkness and dust. A life that the sun rarely touched his skin or fresh air was possible. Clad in tattered clothing and hands calloused from really unforgiving work. Missing fingers. I mean, that's our history. You think about the kid who gets up before the break of dawn, trudging along the road with his father to get to the bowels of the mine so that the company men could treat them like dirt with their stern faces, their cruel eyes. They could care less about these people, care less about these workers. Drove them relentlessly, pushing for more, constantly more, to extract every last ounce of coal from the earth. Never mind the toll that it was taking on the bodies of these workers, on their backs, their shoulders, their arms, their lungs. And you think about the workers, especially the kids. You know, their days were a blur of darkness and toil. Their young lungs filled with coal dust. A back bent under the weight of the burden of trying to help support a family. Understand, the mine was an incredibly treacherous place, like many workplaces during this time. I'll never forget, there was a moment where the guy who gave the tour said, you know, he turned down the lights and you could see almost nothing. You could barely see the hand in front of your face. And he said, now imagine, you walked us through a scenario of, you know, being knee deep in muck of slurry and coal dust and animal feces and human feces. And just a soup of mess, nasty, horrible, cold. And the woman behind us, you know, bless her soul, said, where's OSHA? And literally everyone, you could feel everyone turn and look at her. Even though you couldn't see it, you got the feeling that everyone was like, what? Evidently, you didn't learn much about history. OSHA didn't come around until 1970. But these mines were a treacherous place where the only light you saw were that of the lantern on your hat. You're literally carrying the stuff right there. The air was thick with the stench of sweat, fear, the sounds of coughing and cursing and just, well, a chorus of despair. But you stop and you think about it. You know, that's not the only thing that they feared. The dangers of the mine weren't the only thing that they struggled with. Back in the company town, mom was struggling to make ends meet. Her face etched with worry and exhaustion because the wages they earned barely covered enough to feed the family, let alone the luxury of warmth or comfort. The company owned everything. The company town is where you got your goods, your clothing, your food, you name it. Everything. And they bled people dry with exorbitant prices and you could say unjust practices, but the power that you have from controlling people. And heaven forbid someone get injured. Heaven forbid, because, you know, as the guy was telling this story about that's what caught my attention. There was the one kid had the job. His job was to open and close the doors. Because the coal carts would come down and you would open it for the coal cart to go through and then you'd close it. Because if there was ever a fire or if there were, you know, there was, you know, gases that were going through, you wanted to contain them. His job was to sit there and do that, you know, for 10, 12, 14 hours a day. You're talking 7, 8-year-old children. And when the guide said they had a 50% fatality rate, blew my mind. You go, how could you send your children into that mine? Now, I get desperation. You don't have a choice. But you stop and you think about exactly what that was like for families. Imagine looking into your children's eyes at 6 years old and going, I'm sending you into a place where there's a 50% chance you're not coming home. Where the next time I see you will be because some foreman took your bloody broken body and threw it against the door to let us know you're home. Think of the cruelty. Think of how horrible that was for a working family. So when I see what's coming, when I see Republicans hell-bent on destroying what little labor protections we have, it makes me very worried. That's why on Thursday, the U.S. Department of Labor filed a complaint in federal court to prevent three Alabama companies, Hyundai USA assembly and manufacturing plant from employing children illegally. The complaint, the press release reads, also requests the court require the three companies to surrender profits related to the use of oppressive child labor. Now you go, here's an idea. Instead of just the oppressive child labor, how about we go, you broke the law and we're taking it all? That ain't going to happen. Now, according to the press release, the action follows an investigation by the department's wage and hour division that found, get this, a 13-year-old child working up to 60 hours a week on an assembly line in Laverne, Alabama, operating machines that formed steel metal into auto body parts. They were working a punch press, which you go, I thought those were not supposed to be run by children. Now, in the complaint filed in federal court, according to the press release, the department named three companies as defendants: Hyundai Motor Manufacturing, Alabama LLC, that's the Hyundai part, Smart Alabama LLC, and Best Practices LLC. Evidently, what happens is Best Practices went and hired the children. They sent them to Smart Alabama, which makes the parts for the Hyundai Motor Corporation. And Hyundai believes they're insulated because, well, we hired those people. And of course, those people go, well, no, not us. It's those people. Which is why I got to tell you, I'm happy that Joe Biden has people in these positions that are looking at the bigger picture. Because in the complaint, the department alleges that all three companies jointly employed the child, not just the best practices company, the hiring company. That you went after the hiring company, you went after the company that used them, and the company that benefited from it. Because all of them should have some due diligence in this. Now, according to the department, the alleged behavior happened between July 11th, 2021 and February 1st, 2022. They say the companies willfully and repeatedly violated child labor protections of the Fair Labor Standards Act. The press release says the complaint further alleges that the companies violated the hot goods provision of the Fair Labor Standards Act. And look, they're looking to hold people accountable. The solicitor of labor, she was quoted as saying, companies cannot escape liability by blaming suppliers or staffing companies for child labor violations when they are, in fact, also employers themselves. You go, this is, if you need a reason to vote for Joe Biden, this right here. This is a small reason, but it is a reason. Now, the administrator of the wage and hour division, she said that a 13-year-old working on an assembly line in the United States of America shocks the conscience. As we work to stop illegal child labor where we find it, we also continue to ensure that all employers are held accountable for violating the law. That is a good thing and something we should all be saying, yeah, more of that, please. Because, you know, going back and thinking about those kids that worked in the mines, you know, 100 years ago, that's extreme history. Remembering that and saying and comparing it today doesn't really apply because we're a little bit better off. But shouldn't we be a lot better off? Shouldn't we be saying that no children should be working in dangerous, hazardous conditions? Shouldn't we be saying that no children should be put in those situations? Shouldn't we? Now, I get it. I get it that these aren't the right kind of children. I get it that they're poor children and that they don't necessarily look like our kids. So it's easy to just, you know, they're learning a skill. Because understand, the rhetoric that we're hearing from the right is all about, kids, they need job experience. They got their whole life to get some of that. How about we take their early years? One, let them be a kid. And two, I don't know, maybe help them get an education. help them get through those years? And I can't help but bring it back to myself, because I think back to myself growing up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. I think about, you know, being in a high poverty area. I think about the advantages that, you know, that I was fortunate enough to have. And you go, well, advantages, you were poor. Yeah, I was poor, but it could have been a lot worse. You know, and I think back to some of those great society programs of the Johnson era and go, you know, we at least had something in the cupboards. The cupboards weren't always bare. There were some opportunities to get help. And I look at right now, Congress just passed a new program. And I think this is great. In fact, I'm actually fairly shocked. My local school district sent out an email saying, hey, there's this new program. It's called Summer EBT or Sunbucks. It's been authorized by a bipartisan group in Congress. It's got through. It's going to provide dollars to low-income families who have school-age kids over the summer months. Ask teachers. You know, most schools have school breakfast programs, school lunch programs. Teachers pack, you know, send food home in kids' backpacks so they'll have something over the weekend. This goes on in virtually every school across this country, especially the ones that are high poverty schools. Now, this program, they say, is proven to reduce food insecurity and help kids during the summer. Because remember, I often talk about, you know, I remember as a kid lining up at Purtis Elementary School, you know, in the summer months with my friends and getting some kind of a hot lunch, you know, grilled cheese sandwich, beans and wieners, you know, whatever it was, fried bologna sandwiches, which were a favorite, but something like that. It wasn't a lot. It was something small, but for many of those kids, that was it. That was the only hot meal they were getting for the day because their families were dirt poor. So to hear that we're doing something makes me happy. Now, I had to dig a little bit deeper into this. And evidently, people who are 185% or less of the federal poverty line are eligible. Evidently, the numbers are quite remarkable. I was reading through the, you know, who's eligible and how to apply and all this stuff. And evidently there's an application process that starts in July and then, you know, through August and all this stuff. And I'm going, but how's this going to help kids now? Then I get to the part where they go, oh, that's for 2025. For this summer, households are going to receive $120 on an EBT card, which is $40 a month for each of the summer months, June, July, August, with every kid that's eligible. And this is the part that gets me. It's not per kid. So if you got two kids, it's $120. If you got three kids, it's $120. If you got five kids, it's $120. You go, it's not a lot. No, it's not a lot. $40 a month, $10 a week is not a lot. No, it's something. It's a start. It's that foot in the door to help families. And again, not political, not red hat, not blue hat. It's feeding people, something I'm all in favor of. So I guess, you know, good on these folks who got this pushed through, and good on the people who are promoting this. But again, shouldn't we be doing a little bit more? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, definitely want to hear it, especially on this. Do you think we should be doing more? Gonna take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1987. That was the day that Rose Will Monroe, one of the women who came to be known as Rosie the Riveter, died in Clarksville, Indiana. She was 77 years old. Rose had gone to work in a factory making B-52 bombers in Ypsilanti, Michigan during World War II. She was one of thousands of women in the United States who entered the industrial workforce to support the war effort, while more and more men entered the armed forces. While Rose Will Monroe worked at the factory, the image of Rosie the Riveter was already becoming perhaps one of the most iconic symbols of U.S. labor. The nickname Rosie the Riveter was first used in a song in 1942. The song was inspired by another real-life Rosie. Rosalind P. Walter worked during the war building Corsair fighter planes. Along with the song, a popular poster showed Rosie with a red kerchief tied around her hair, sleeves rolled up, arm muscles flexed, showing the strength of women workers. "We Can Do It" was emblazoned across the top of the poster. Then, an actor by the name of Walter Pigeon visited the Ypsilanti factory. He was helping to make a promotional film to support the war effort at home. When he found out there was a real Rosie who worked as a riveter in the plant, he recruited her for the film. The image of Rosie the Riveter lives on as a symbol of labor and women's empowerment.
All the day long, whether rain or shine, she's a part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie the Riveter keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little frail can do more than a male can do. Rosie the Riveter. Rosie
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So while I had to find out about the Sunbucks program from my local school district, thank goodness for CNBC, who wrote a really bad fluff piece titled "America's Richest Self-Made Woman Grew Up on a Dairy Farm. Now She Has a Net Worth of $20.9 billion. That's the headline. Pulled herself up by her bootstraps. Never mind that her husband was a roofing contractor and they started this supply company together and built it up and that he kind of done. Never mind any of that. She's America's self-made woman. And she's the number one richest self-made woman for 7 years in a row. And look, you know, when I look at this, I go, I remember Diane Hendricks, and what I remember about her was she was the person who had, you know, Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, in her pocket, and was pushing the whole right to work thing. In fact, you know, there's a famous video of her, you know, almost, you know, in an aroused state, let's put it that way, going, "When do we get a right to work?" And you go, I wonder, how'd you make a good portion of that money off the backs of workers? Maybe. And what's frustrating to me is we prop up those who, I don't know, sorry, those who make their wealth off the backs of others. Now, she's quoted as saying that, you know, they started a training center. And, you know, these vocational schools, you could become a welder and you could make $50,000 a year. Those are good jobs. They're really good jobs. Yeah. And they also make you a lot of money as well. So there's some self-interest there. This whole idea that, you know, she's benevolent, not buying on any level whatsoever. Interesting thing going on in Minnesota. Evidently, this is one of these weird kind of moments where we are in our politics. A guy named Royce White, who had been a George Floyd protester, one of the protest leaders, former college basketball star, now right-wing darling. Somehow there was a conversion, now a right-wing darling, and Senate candidate in Minnesota. In fact, the Republicans have endorsed this Royce White for Senate. And it's curious that the report's now coming out that he's a deadbeat. Evidently, he's been ordered to catch up on child support payments that that we'll say he fell behind on at least half a dozen times from 2020 to 2023. And look, you go, sometimes people struggle. Sometimes there's some of that. But I got to tell you, there's sometimes where just people are not great. And I looked at this story and I go, this is a perfect Republican candidate. This is somebody who clearly the GOP can get behind. Because I'll tell you, it's interesting to me reading the comments of people who are defending Trump. Our system worked. Our system of justice worked. Stood trial. Had an opportunity to defend himself. Refused to take the stand. And ultimately, a jury of 12 of his peers, or 12 New Yorkers, however you want to put that, they decided that he was guilty. There's part of me that goes, you should celebrate that the system works, that, you know, everyone can be held accountable. Because I know a lot of us, and I'm still a little jaded and believe that the rich and powerful have the better opportunity to get a fairer trial by having the best legal minds. Now, what's interesting is watching some of the morning after quarterbacking by the legal scholars who are going, don't understand why they did this. Not sure why they did this. This was entirely defensible. And this could be one of those things. 9 times out of 10, a decent lawyer gets you out of it. Or it's just, he's guilty. And I'm going to go with guilty. Guilty. Now, the question becomes, where does this lead us as a country? Because there are so many other things that I'm concerned about over Trump. And if you've noticed the last several weeks, we haven't really been talking much about Donald Trump. I've been talking more about the issues that I find important. And that's where I want to go until election time, because this election is not about the victimhood of Donald Trump. This is not about his ranting and whining and carrying on. It's not about him at all, in my view. It's about how we make workers' lives better, how we make people's lives better, how we give my kids better opportunities, how we move forward in a way to get education for people, to get opportunities, to get health care. We got a lot of problems. I'm not going to paint this great rosy picture. I had someone email me and say, well, you know, I'm struggling and I'm having a hard time making ends meet. I'm not seeing where you think this economy is so great. And look, I understand people are struggling. And we all look at an economy and how we're doing. And as I said yesterday on the program, the reality is it's been this way for a while. This is not new. People believe the economy is not working. And I'll be the first to tell you, I don't think it's working for the benefit of working people. We have a growing economy. The problem is I don't believe we have the bargaining power for working people to be able to get what they create. And for me, that's what this election should be about. Not about the complaining or the whining. Certainly not about the ego. But what's actually being done? And I'll tell you, I look at what Biden's done so far. I think we're heading on the right track. I think we're heading toward the right track. The idea of bringing back manufacturing jobs, the idea of investing in infrastructure, of doing the things that we need to do to create those opportunities, and then, of course, giving workers the ability to bargain for those better wages, hours, conditions. I'd love to see a tax bill that helps raise taxes a little bit so that we can use some of the money to pay down our debt, because I'm a little concerned about debt and deficits. But not like we're hearing from the right, who did nothing during their time in power but spend more. So I don't want to hear anything from them. But I want to hear how you're doing. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Share your thoughts, your comments, anything we talked about today on the program, or something you want to hear about in the future, by all means. I'd like to hear it. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support. WISS 1100 AM Berlin. W252 DR Oshkosh. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.